This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. In the studio with me, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. It's Friday afternoon. My God, it's the end of the week, George. And you know what? It's our last show before Hari Raya.
Exactly. What happened to the year?
It's right? Just gone.
It's just gone. Second home for those who are fasting. And then second home, this is your final stretch, right?
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Okay. We have an interesting topic, and not Hari Raya related at all, but, you know, these articles were coming out on the BBC and in, you know, research science.
Excitement.
Very much in the area of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And it was two articles which really got me excited, because one was about a woman with terminal breast cancer who had been saved by pioneering new therapy. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine, she's cured,
exactly.
Apparently. And the other one was a life-changing breakthrough that could liberate thousands of women with early stage of breast cancer, they don't have to undergo chemotherapy. I mean, the dreaded chemotherapy, which everybody absolutely doesn't want to go through.
Detests, really, isn't it? That's probably one of the reasons why women probably don't want to go screening, because of potential needs for chemotherapy.
And also, it's your breast, right?
Yes,
I mean,
indeed.
It's an important part of the anatomy for the woman. So joining us to shed more light on this development is Dr. Muhammad Azrif Ahmad Anwar. He's a consultant clinical oncologist. Welcome to the show, Dr. Azrif. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
You look terribly familiar.
Thank you very much.
He walked through the door and I thought to myself, he looks exactly like his sister. And
yes.
If you're wondering, Dr. Azrif is actually our neurogeneticist, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar's brother. Well, you know, the genes just run in the family in a big way, Dr. Azrif.
Well, yes, apparently. Thanks to our parents.
Yes, always. Thank you, Daddy.
I'm not sure we'll become apparent that the intelligence also runs in the family as well.
Definitely. Yeah, you know, is there anybody else who's a doctor in the family?
No.
Just the two of you?
Just the two of us.
Okay, all right. That's good enough, isn't it? Okay, what did you think, Dr. Azrif? I mean, let's start with the first one. A woman with terminal breast cancer has been, you know, supposedly treated, cured. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, this came out in the BBC website, I think, earlier this week, right? Mm-hmm. So this was this lady from the US who was diagnosed with basically pre-invasive breast cancer about 10 years ago.
What does that mean?
So that means it's what we call ductal carcinoma in situ. That means the cancer hasn't actually
spread.
Not spread, but hasn't actually turned invasive. So you can describe it as like a pre-cancer.
Okay.
Mm. So diagnosed pre-cancer 10 years ago, had a mastectomy, and then the cancer recurred recently with fairly extensive disease, the lymph nodes, lungs, liver, etc. Mm. So she had the usual chemotherapy, hormonal therapy, etc. And then she agreed to enter this clinical trial. This clinical trial actually started in 2010. It was looking at this new cellular therapy where they would administer this treatment to patients with what we call chemo-refractory. That means metastatic cancer where patients have had multiple chemotherapies or endocrine therapies in the past. So no further treatment would be available for them.
Okay.
So the article was published in Nature Medicine, and I think this sparked the interest within the field, especially, and the BBC
picked it up,
yeah. And then everybody else picked it up.
Including that's right. So the headlines. Right.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the lady was given 3 months to live, I understand.
When the metastasis was diagnosed.
Yes, it was quite extensive. And I think looking at, reading through the article, she was even progressing on her latest treatment before she entered the clinical trial.
Okay.
So this treatment actually involved the patient receiving fairly intensive chemotherapy for about a week prior to the infusion of these T lymphocytes, which are a kind of white blood cell. What they did was they took a biopsy from her tumor. She had a tumor in her chest, so they did a biopsy, did fairly extensive genetic analysis of her cancer, and they managed to identify four characteristic mutant proteins that was specific to her cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They then took some of her blood, isolated her own white blood cells, filtered out the T lymphocytes, and then cultured the T lymphocytes to identify the mutant proteins within.
So the T lymphocytes are
white
blood cells that are capable of attacking the cancer.
Yes.
The stronger ones. Is that correct?
So we have many different kinds of white blood cells.
Yep.
The T lymphocytes are the ones that are usually involved in our body's innate ability to identify viruses, bacteria,
right,
and also tumors as they are developing.
Yeah, okay? It's considered foreign in some way. They know the tumor itself.
Yes, they can identify what is self, so that means natural, mm-hmm, versus what is abnormal or foreign.
Okay.
The enemy.
Yeah. The enemy, yes.
The enemy. So, I mean, it just in a kind of like a really basic urologist understanding is that this woman...
Really basic?
Basic, well, very basic. Because seriously, what is going to hopefully transpire later on is that I think breast cancer can get a little bit complex, and obviously its treatment evolves with time, which what we're going to discuss later on. You know, for many, many years, we used to think that you just bombard women with a lot of chemotherapy and then you try to cure as many as possible. And later on, this new data appeared that some women may not need such aggressive treatment. So this is another kind of complexity, another layer of complexity that you can enhance the white cell to attack this tumor.
Yep.
So to get it right, that she received chemotherapy first, essentially,
yep,
just to kind of like suppress her own immunity and also wipe out whatever residual tumor she had.
Well, she had chemotherapy about a week before they infused her new white blood cells. The purpose of this chemotherapy wasn't really to wipe out the cancers, but to, as you mentioned, to suppress her own immunity.
Okay. And then a piece of tissue is being analysed and find out four things that is weird about this mutant that can differentiate between herself and also the tumour.
Yes.
And build up as much defence as possible to attack it.
Yes.
Wow,
so,
just
yes,
sounds like a too, yes, too good to be true.
So
right?
These T lymphocytes are taken out and then they're grown in the lab?
Yes.
Wow.
So they manage to grow 90 billion
cells. Oh,
well, 82 billion.
Okay.
Wow. Yes.
All right. They exaggerate.
Yeah. Well, they
don't know. Yeah.
We know when it comes to several billions, and you know when it comes to a trillion,
it's nothing,
right?
Yeah. Okay, what is it,
right?
Billion?
You can just keep it at home.
Yeah, it wasn't 2.6
in bags.
Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Coming back to this, right? Essentially, this is almost a bespoke sci-fi kind of like precision.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a bit surprised for two things. Number one is that, you know what, we're going to invite a lot of listeners asking questions about breast cancer because obviously some people get worried that this woman 10 years ago had precancerous condition, had it completely removed, mastectomy, and 10 years later she ended up with metastatic disease that was terminal. So, you know, isn't that unusual? That's number one thing. In your experience, how often do you get that? And number two is that based on one person's experience, this was published in Nature.
Yes.
So can you comment on those two issues?
So it is highly unusual for someone for a precancerous lesion to relapse with metastatic disease at diagnosis 10 years later.
Mm.
The vast majority of women with precancerous lesions do not relapse.
Really?
Yes.
Where do you think it relapsed then?
So this, now, why did it relapse? She may have had a new primary, okay? So she had a mastectomy done of the left breast, but the article that was published doesn't mention whether she had new cancer in the other breast.
I see.
Okay, so that might have happened, okay? And then it was missed at presentation or so, but precancerous lesions by definition should not metastasize.
Yeah, most people with the removal of primary, it's a curative intervention,
yes,
isn't it?
So what you're describing is what we call immunotherapy. We use that word a lot. And my very basic understanding of immunotherapy is to pump up your immune system to fight the enemy. And that's exactly what they've done.
But this one is so specific, though.
Yeah. Yes, there are many different kinds of immunotherapies, though.
Okay.
Do elaborate a bit.
Does it work? Why has it worked well with this type of breast cancer? And from what I understand, it is it any sort of breast cancer, or can it be applied only to this lady and her condition?
So she had what we call estrogen receptor positive. So that means her breast cancer was sensitive to estrogen, right? Hormone sensitive breast cancers. So there are in such women with metastatic hormone-sensitive breast cancer, we usually treat them with endocrine therapy first. And only when endocrine therapy fails do we subject the woman to chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. These from an immune point of view, these kind of cancers are what we call cold cancers. So they don't express, they don't kind of stimulate the immune system very much.
Mm.
Okay. As opposed to other cancers that we would call as hot tumors, for example, melanomas, lung cancers, bladder cancers.
Meaning the immune system goes into overdrive. In breast cancer, it doesn't.
Yes.
Okay.
So the breast cancers can kind of like hide from the immune system.
Right.
Okay. Whereas these other cancers, the lung, melanomas, etc., they do. The body can identify them as foreign, but these cancers can deactivate the T lymphocytes as they're entering the tumors.
Okay.
So the current immunotherapy treatments we have now basically are called immune checkpoint inhibitors. So they remove the ability of the cancer cells to deactivate the white blood cells. Okay. So therefore, we kind of like uncloak the cancer cells to the body's own immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So the white blood cells can go in and eradicate the cancer cells. Okay, but in cold tumors, it doesn't stimulate the immune system. So even by giving these immune checkpoint inhibitors, it doesn't tend to do very much. So by giving, in the treatment that they had designed, they gave the patient chemotherapy to suppress the immune system, administer her own T lymphocytes that could identify the cancer cells, and then the patient had 4 infusions of this immune checkpoint inhibitor drugs to basically remove the cancer cell's ability to deactivate her own immune system.
Okay. And, is it going to work for majority of the patients, you think? I mean, how are you going to apply this?
How excited should we be?
Yeah, I know. How excited are you? I mean, do you think that this... I mean, it's very...
Usher didn't look so excited. It's kind of just, been here before.
So no.
Yes.
So, no. Not when I have hope.
The important thing here is you can think of it as a proof of concept.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Right. So they came up with a hypothesis. They tested it. And it appeared to work very well in this lady. Now, this may be the foot in the door that we need to be able to develop it further, open the door further, and kind of develop the technology or techniques further so that we can apply it to other patients mm-hmm. who may be suitable.
I mean, for the skeptics, they will always say, I kind of heard this sort of bespoke treatment before. And it's not new technology, is it? It's not new method, isn't
no.
it?
No. Okay. No.
So then why has this article or this piece of research given so much publicity? And are there gaps in this research?
So if I were to be critical of this study, this is a case report, so just one one patient who did very well. But I dug a little bit further, and I found that, as I mentioned, this study started in 2010, and the target recruitment for this study was over 300 patients. So it makes me wonder what happened to the other 300-plus patients who did have this treatment, mm-hmm. did they have such a good response?
Oh.
Okay. Now, it could be the another criticism as well is, as you've mentioned, George, we see, as an oncologist, we see many of these things, the exceptional responders, okay, that do very well. It may not have much to do with the treatment. It's just a patient's own immune system, natural healing ability, etc., that gave her that extra edge to fight her cancer and get it under control when other treatments have failed for her in the past.
Mm. Okay. I mean, so obviously you said this is maybe the step to, a step towards that holy grail of bespoke treatment for cancer. 10 years from today, do you think, this obviously has opportunities to open up ways to treat other cancers. And then do you think we may see more roles of such targeted, precise medicine in the future in the field of oncology?
We will. The components of a treatment is already available. Mm-hmm. We can already do genetic analysis of the tumor specimens to identify what are the abnormal proteins or enzymes, mutations that we can use to design a treatment using various targeted therapies. So we already have that. Immunotherapy now in the same in a meeting recently, last weekend in fact, now for lung cancers, we do not really, for the majority of lung cancers, we can treat them with just immunotherapy.
Really? Wow.
They do not need chemo up front.
Hmm. Okay, so essentially...
And does that mean you will be treated?
Pardon?
Does that mean you will be treated and cured?
Yes, so that's...
I always worry about using the word cured when it comes to cancer.
So, yes, so for this lady that we mentioned, I think she was on follow-up for 22 years with no evidence of relapse. Just like in... Now, we have to be a bit careful when we use the word cure. Mm-hmm. Like I always tell my patients, you're only cured if you've been cancer-free for 5 or more years. Okay, so during that 5-year follow-up period, even though you have no evidence of cancer, there is still a risk that the cancer may relapse later on. Mm-hmm. We never know. Okay, so we do need a bit more water under the bridge. A bit more time has to pass before we can tell the patient you've been cured. Because I have patients where they relapse 7, 8 years
after this lady, 10 years.
And this lady actually relapsed 10 years later. So for her, I would say we'll have to wait, I think, for a minimum of 10 years before we can say that she's definitively cured.
So does this mean that long-term for this lady, is this a one-off treatment for her, or does she have to undergo other sessions of immunotherapy, as in, you know, keep, you know, making more effective T lymphocytes and then, you know, putting them back into her system,
so,
really?
So apparently, according to the article, the T lymphocytes were only infused once, and she only had 4 of these immune checkpoint inhibitor drugs given 3 weeks apart. So I don't think she's on any further treatment now.
After this. Okay. We'll come back and continue the discussion, because what you are describing to me also sounds like how vaccinations actually work.
Yes.
So I want to find out what's the difference, really. If it's like a vaccination, then we all take off our blood, white blood cells, do something to it and send it back in and get them to fight,
this is what I was thinking.
Makes it sound very easy,
right.
But like, you know, what are the... We're being very...
Simplistic.
Exactly. So the realist, we need to hear from you as to what is it we're not thinking about. We'll have this discussion up next. If you have a question for Dr. Azrif or Dr. George Lee, we're discussing breast cancer treatment. We just spoke about immunotherapy. Also going to come back and find out how in some sections of women with breast cancer may not actually need chemotherapy going forward. We'll have that discussion up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our doctor in the house, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and joining us also Dr. Muhammad Azrif Ahmad Anwar, consultant clinical oncologist. We're trying to figure out latest development in the area of breast cancer treatment. Very exciting news coming out. But as Dr. Azrif also said, there are gaps in this research where a woman with terminal breast cancer has been saved by pioneering new therapy, meaning immunotherapy, where her T lymphocytes are part of, okay, to make it simple, her white blood cells are removed. Her strong T lymphocytes are actually extracted, and those capable of attacking the cancers are sent back. And they, you know, this involved pumping like 82 billion cancer-killing immune cells into her body, and then that helped her to heal. We were very excited until Dr. Azrif told us that, you know, there's still a long way to go as far as this research is concerned. I just wanted to ask you, how different is this method to how vaccinations work?
Very similar. So vaccinations, basically, you take, for example, a virus, you take part of the virus, and then you basically inject it back into the patient. That part of the virus then stimulates the patient's own immune system to recognize, identify, and also build like a memory of that part of the virus. So that if the patient then is exposed to the virus again in the future, rather than taking some time for the immune system to be activated again, you have a acceleration of the immune response against the new virus. Mm. So immunology is a very complex field. Mm-hmm. Which we barely covered in medical school.
Yes, and I understand we have one or two immunologists in this country only. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yep. So this is a lot of the oncologists have to go back to school, really.
Everybody, all the doctors need to
pull
go
up,
back.
Pull out the immunology sections of the textbooks and read it again.
And when we see the anagrams of all these, what triggers what, and then that sends chills down your spine because it's not easy to understand.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It's just cascade of, you know, reactions, a bodily reaction.
But it sounds fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I'm quite glad Mira brought up the idea of vaccines. Obviously, you know, if you read the journals, many people started thinking about cancer vaccines, right? In order to do that. What Mira is highlighting is that in that lady who was presented in the Nature Science was that she was already affected by the disease. So the treatment is immunosuppression. But if you have a vaccine, you haven't not been affected by the disease. So when you inject preempt that defense, then it is a vaccination, mm-hmm. right? Okay. How likely it is that we're going to, in the future, see cancer vaccine? I mean, obviously, HPV is a landmark.
But that's interesting, George, because HPV, we know that the virus causes cancer.
So if you look at this concept of this breast cancer, you know that there's certain genetic mutations of certain cancer that if you build up specific T cell that defend you against that mutation, then innately, then you may suppress that mutation from happening. How likely is that?
I'll answer that question with my own question.
Okay. All right.
So why don't we have a vaccine for the common cold?
All right.
For the common cold, don't know.
We don't. It's because
we do for the
there's so many different types.
There's antigenic drift. Uh-huh. So the virus kind of changes its coat.
Yep.
So the same thing is happening with the cancer.
Right.
Right. It changes. It evolves. So it evolves over time. So it's the successive generations of the cancer cells are changing their coats. So if they can't find a way to survive, they kind of change from blue to red, right? And then that evades the body's immune system for a certain period of time.
So the cancer cells are always ahead of the human in understanding how they evolved.
Of our immune system.
It's a constant war, basically, right?
One
side will have the upper hand, in some periods, and then other times, our own body will have the upper hand.
Right.
Okay. Wow. Wow. And do you think it's significant for women with breast cancer going forward?
I think this kind of case report is very encouraging, because it tells us that we are inching closer to basically the holy grail of having a treatment that will eradicate metastatic breast cancer, or at least keep it under a durable control for a long period of time. I hope this will encourage more women to participate in clinical trials in Malaysia. Mm. Right?
So I can, if I want to come to you and I say, Dr. Azriv, you know, can I be a part of a study where, you know, I can be like this lady?
Yes.
Some tried immunotherapy.
Yes.
It can actually happen.
Yes.
Okay. All right. What are the risks involved?
Of taking part in a clinical trial?
Yes.
It depends on what kind of clinical trial you enter into. There are many different kinds, levels. The ones we have currently in Malaysia are what's called phase 3 clinical trials. So that means the new treatment is compared to the standard treatment. A lot of patients think that they are guinea pigs, but in fact, this new treatment has already undergone extensive research and investigation, so that this is our best candidate to replace the current standard treatment. So in such a situation, the participant or the patient is able to get the latest treatment at basically negligible cost, because patients in the clinical trials usually have all the treatments provided for free.
And also stringent monitoring by the medical
much,
staff.
far more.
Yeah.
Okay. So far more stringent.
It means a lot of instances is actually a win-win situation. For patients.
Okay. If you have a question for us, the number to call is 0377-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0187-89-8899. Come on. We have Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar's brother in the studio with us. You need to ask him a question. He's an oncologist. She's a geneticist. We should have brought her in, actually.
That's right.
I mean, she would have, because it's so gene-related as well. Do we have this gene expression test available here in Malaysia?
Which gene expression
in relation test? To finding out about whether immunotherapy is an option or not?
Oh, yes. There are many companies who offer this service in Malaysia.
Okay. Costly? Immunotherapy, when you say generally, in my mind, equals...
bomb.
Yes. Yes, we're talking about six figures
per
year for the immunotherapies, but...
Why does it cost so much? You're using my own white blood cells, my own T lymphocytes, and then you're doing something to it and sending it back. Why do I have to pay so much?
Don't answer that question. So we'll move on to the next one.
Really?
She's just being particularly
difficult. Thank you for
saving me, Josh. Right. We all know why it costs so much.
No, really. Seriously. It's not like you have, you know, high material cost or anything.
Because actually, you know, if you think about it, obviously R&D is one part of it, but the other part of it, in order to monitor how many cells you generate and then, you know, to put it back into another person, it involves a lot of work and a lot of stringent monitoring.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, George.
Okay. I think the next segment actually is something that is a lot more applicable to the real world.
Yes, yeah? Which is, you know, a latest life-changing breakthrough that could liberate thousands of women with early stages of breast cancer from having to undergo chemotherapy. Now, you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, okay. So in the past, we would, if we have a woman coming in with early stage breast cancer, we would look at the clinical features of the patient and the disease. For example, the age, her previous illnesses, the cancer itself, the stage of the cancer, and in breast cancer specifically, the estrogen, progesterone, and receptor, HER2 receptor status. But what this particular test is called an Oncotype DX. It basically analyzes 21 genes of the cancer. And these 21 genes were identified to predict the risk of recurrence. So we have to place this recently published study into the relevant background, really. This test, Oncotype DX, was first published in 2015, where they showed that a woman who had this test... Sorry, I have to explain the test. So you take the specimen, you send it off to the lab, then you get a report. This report basically is a recurrent score, anything from 1 all the way up to 50. So basically, this test will categorize a woman to low recurrent score, intermediate recurrent score, and high-risk recurrent score. Okay, so those with a high-risk recurrent score will go on to have chemo. The study published in 2015 showed that those in the low risk do not need chemo. Okay, but we have this large group of women, about 70%, who have this test. Oncotype DX will test as an intermediate score. Mm-hmm. So that means from 11 to 25. So the first study that was published in 2015 showed that the low risk, you don't need chemo. This follow-on study, the Taylor X study, basically looked at what do we do about the women who have this intermediate score.
The gray zone.
Gray zone, yes. Yeah. So in the past, we don't know what to do. The discussions often take a very long time, very difficult for the patient to come to a decision. But what this study shows is these women over 10,000 women were involved. Basically, the woman had to have estrogen receptor positive, so hormone-sensitive breast cancer. The lymph nodes are negative, so that means not involved. So we're really talking about stage 1, early stage 2 breast cancers here. And so there were over 9,000 women who 10,000 women had the test, the Oncotype DX, mm-hmm. and about 9,700 were in the intermediate risk. So these women were then half of them had endocrine therapy alone, the other half The other half had chemotherapy and endocrine therapy. So they followed the patients up for about 9 years. And what they found was that there was no difference between the two groups.
Survival, like nearly, nearly 100%, right? 98% on both arms.
Is that, so the the disease-free survival, which is technical term, meaning the percentage who either develop a distant relapse, so the cancer relapses somewhere else, death from any cause, or a new primary cancer. So, for example, you have breast cancers, maybe 5 years later you have colon cancer or so, right? So that would be a second primary cancer. So this was a disease-free survival. And then 9 years, it was about, it was similar, around 84%, okay? And no difference between endocrine therapy and those who had chemotherapy and endocrine therapy. So endocrine therapy is actually very simple. It's just a tablet that they take every day.
What is it actually doing?
Okay, so these cancers are hormone sensitive. So that means the woman's natural estrogen that are usually produced by the ovaries, most of them produced by the ovaries, but can also be produced by other tissues within the body. This hormone, estrogen, actually stimulates the cancer cells, the hormone sensitive cancer cells, and activates various genes that enables proliferation and metastasis.
So it has a little bit of like prostate cancer, which actually responds a little bit to hormone. Like, I mean, I realize we're getting a little bit technical, right? But what I would like to do is invite the Klang Valley listeners to join in the conversation. I'll give you a little bit of example, right? A cousin of mine who's age 36, about 2 months ago, rang me up. Unfortunately, had a diagnosis of breast cancer, and very young. And then the first thing she saw, a very well-regarded doctor here, who actually been on the show quite a few times, Pravjit basically just said that, look, what we need to do is risk stratify you, basically just work out your risk and everything, and then said we need to give you chemotherapy, and then that will give you a really high chance of survival. And then, of course, explaining all these things about whether you are HER positive or negative, estrogen positive or negative, node positive or negative, and all those jargons kind of like get into her brain. The first thing she realizes is that, I thought it's only one lump, straight swan. Now I have to have all these things. And then it scared me a lot. And then the first thing she picked up phone and called me and said, look, why are we doing this? Are we giving me, it's like, how many people do you treat to save one person? Which is a very valid question that she asked. And then she kind of eventually just said, how likely it is to cure me? And then am I just doing this for nothing, just for safety? And all those questions are very valid questions. I'm quite sure quite a lot of, Clinton Valley listeners out there who've been through that really want to ask this question. Does that mean that this particular research actually will tell us a little bit more specifically that we don't really need to put women through the unnecessary chemo in the future? It just for the first part of my question is that, can you explain a little bit for those people who are equally confused as the cousin of this 36-year-old? What is all these complexity? Can we make it a little bit more simple?
Okay, well, I apologize if it came across as too technical.
I'm understanding. Don't listen to George. George doesn't know anything that you're talking about.
I only think from waist below.
But it is a very exciting thing.
It is.
Absolutely, yes.
So basically, when the lady comes in with stage one breast cancer, right, we have to make a decision as to what treatment she needs to prevent the cancer from coming back.
Okay.
So we
Your priority.
That's a priority because I think if you ask any of the patients, they say, I do not want the cancer to come back. Okay. So we want to minimize, get that risk down as low as possible, protect her so that she can carry on with a normal life. So we have various treatments available. One is endocrine therapy, so the tablets that I mentioned, okay, that will block the cancer from growing. Then we also have chemotherapy that we sometimes need to add on if the cancer is more aggressive, or, for example, higher stage or basically more aggressive cancers. the patient and the doctor, when we discuss, the problem we have is we do not know whether endocrine therapy alone is sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we're always wondering, should I add in the chemo as well?
Just to be safe.
Yeah, because your priority is to make sure it doesn't come back.
Yep. So in the past, we have been, you could say, overly cautious, too conservative. And we said if there was a doubt, we would say, okay, let's just do the chemo. Okay? But now we have a test that can allow us to refine this question further. Okay? So we do this test. If you fulfill the criteria for having this test, have it done, and it will basically tell us whether we need to add in chemo or not.
Okay? Wow.
Because then this test will give us the information to solve this question.
Right.
Okay? Because what this trial showed was there was no advantage to chemo in those who were the intermediate score.
So answer the questions of just in case, well, I'll give it to you anyway. So over-treatment can be prevented in many women.
So that means we can prevent a large proportion of women in stage one, okay? Because if you add in the low risk is actually only about 15% of the stage one women. And the intermediate risk score is about another 70%.
Right.
So the high risk is only the remaining 15%. So let's say if you have 100 women with stage one breast cancer coming to see you, you can give an answer for 85 of them and tell them you do not need chemo.
You're fine. Yeah, that's truly a paradigm shift because, first of all, healthcare-wise, you save a lot of money.
Yes.
Number two is that you save many, many women from that unnecessary risk because chemotherapy has significant risk.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. All the side effects, the hair loss, nausea, vomiting, not able to work, care for the family, etc. Right.
It will not help with those in the high-risk group. The 15%?
Yes. So this is where the research is evolving, you see. At the moment, the 15%, the risk of recurrence is still quite high. So we do advise those who are high risk to have chemotherapy. But then we can be sure then that the chemotherapy will help. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, although at the moment, this test is only applicable for the stage one, but there is a trial ongoing called the RxPonder that is looking at the higher stages, so those with lymph node positive disease, which we should have the results in about 3 to 4 years' time.
Okay, I'm just going to digress a little because we have a caller here. Mrs. Law wants to know something. Mrs. Law, you have a question?
Afternoon.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Thank you for the information. But I would like to ask is that normally the problem of a patient of breast cancer is that they do not know what to eat. And because of do not know what to eat, many advice from everywhere, don't eat this, don't eat that. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, they lost the appetite of eating. They don't have enough nutrients, not because of the cancer that is causing an issue. Other parts is also having issue because they are not eating properly.
Good point.
And whenever we meet the doctor said, you eat everything. And you start to question, are you sure I can eat everything? Because the statement is, don't eat processed food. But almost everything is, can't eat, you know. So I know the oncologist has some, maybe some of you can have good advice for the patient of breast cancer because it is kind of torturing. Even the breast cancer group, support group also, they're not confirmed what can eat, what cannot be eaten.
Okay.
An example, soy is meant to be good for protein, but for estrogen positive, you're supposed not to eat too much of a soy product.
Mm.
So these are the things that cause the patient
anxiety
and confusion.
Yes.
Okay.
I would like you to elaborate a bit on this.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mrs. Law. There you go.
I'm sure this is the sort of question you get asked every single day.
Yes, several times a day.
Oh, right.
Right, so thank you very much for the question, Mrs. Law. It is a good question, and I think that in Malaysia, since we love our food, the standard answer to this is basically there's no one particular food that will affect your prognosis or affect the chances of the cancer coming back.
Mm.
Okay, I think that's a message here. Yeah. There's no one particular food to avoid. We do advise, so whenever my patient asks me, what food can I eat? I say, eat healthy food.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so, because she made a good point that, you know, if you know the neighbors said you cannot eat this, you can eat that, and then you starve yourself, and then you don't have the nutritional energy to fight the disease. Yes. And then also to keep yourself healthy. I mean, she made quite interesting point about
soil
mm-hmm. that may contain estrogen. Some people say, you know, certain pesticide contain estrogen, you know, some poultry that actually is estrogen treated. How worrying is ingestion of these, food material that has estrogen within it or believed to have estrogen?
I think the amount of estrogen we produce vastly exceeds that of anything we consume. So soy protein is a very common question. The problem is because the data is quite controversial. When we look at epidemiological data, so that means data that comes from different countries. So the countries that consume a lot of soy milk, right, China, Japan, etc., they actually have a lower incidence of breast cancer.
Mm.
And one theory behind that is possibly the soy kind of helps to protect these women from developing breast cancer.
There's so much conflicting data and research out
yes.
there.
And on the other hand, also you have laboratory-based studies where they expose mice to very high concentrations of soy. And these studies showed that there is a change in the expression of the genes that may stimulate the growth of cancer cells. So this is where when people pick up this kind of news, it gets into the media, no offense, mm-hmm. right?
That's why I call you to clarify.
Yes. So then everything goes viral now on social media, okay?
Yes.
And then people are confused because there's a lot of conflicting information
of
coming
course,
through.
Yeah. Yeah.
In moderation.
Yeah. And so balanced diet to keep
balanced
healthy.
Balanced diet, yes. Right. So I tell my patients, if you are hormone-sensitive breast cancer, moderate or consumption of soy is fine because if you were to extrapolate it from the mice studies, you have to consume kilograms of soy every day to have the same effect on you.
Mm. Okay,
which I think is not possible.
Okay. Can you just very quickly explain to us the role of chemotherapy? There's so much negativity around chemotherapy. And, you know, often we need it. I mean, as you said, there in some case cancers, you need chemotherapy. And then there's so much negativity around it.
Like the high-risk person,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
If you have risk stratification that they show that you're high-risk, you need that. And, you know, what sort of risk would a woman need to consider?
Yeah. So chemotherapy basically started in the 1950s, right? Basically in the treatment of hematological malignancies, so leukemias, etc., right? So this is when you had children with leukemias. They were basically dying within a few months of being diagnosed with the disease. So the researchers in U.S. Undertook extensive research to develop the treatment for leukemia, which is basically chemotherapy. Immunotherapy is now taking over, but we still, patients diagnosed with leukemias, we still treat with chemo first. With breast cancers, we reserve chemotherapy for patients with the higher stages. So, for example, stage 3, where they have quite a high risk of relapse, or if we need to, for example, patients with a large tumor in the breast where surgery is not possible, we then give those women chemotherapy to shrink the disease, to allow surgery to be done, possibly even for breast conserving surgery. Okay. It is unfortunate that chemotherapy has such a bad press. Chemotherapy is basically a tool, right? You have to use the tool judiciously and appropriately in selected patients because when you can identify a patient who will benefit from chemotherapy, the benefit from chemo is undeniable, basically. I've seen many women who have chemotherapy with big fungating tumors. They respond very well, okay, and they can continue with a normal life. The other cancers, we do need to add in chemotherapy to radiotherapy, to the radiotherapy treatments to basically make those treatments more effective. But there are many kinds of chemotherapy drugs, mm-hmm. and not all of them have the same kind of side effects. The newer chemotherapy drugs have much less side effects than the older ones.
Okay.
How do you convince patients who are still quite fearful of this bad press of chemotherapy?
I think first, the key thing there is a doctor-patient relationship. Mm-hmm. As you know, George, you have to build a rapport.
The trust.
Once the patient, once you build that rapport, you understand the background of the patient, then they then can take your advice seriously.
And you oncologists, you know, sometimes don't have the best reputation now, do you?
Oncologists, I thought they were urologists.
The urologists, no lah, the oncologists, because they always think all you want to do is chemo away. How would you come back? What would you come back and say to that?
Okay, well, now we don't just have chemo. We also have endocrine therapy, targeted therapies,
immunotherapy.
Right? And also immunotherapies.
Okay, so you just don't want chemo away.
Yeah, so we have more than one arrow in our quiver now.
Okay, fantastic. So now, just building on this research where a lot of women now will not have to undergo chemotherapy, how many women in Malaysia do you think will benefit from this?
So it is unfortunate, but in Malaysia, it's only about 20% of the newly diagnosed breast cancers are actually diagnosed at stage one. So
only 20%.
Only about 20%. Okay.
Compared to, let's say,
US. Early diagnosis, go as soon as possible when you feel a lump and do those mammograms.
Yes.
So, I mean, what you're saying is that 20% early stage, 80% late stage?
No. 50% will be advanced stage, so stage 3 or stage 4, and then the other 30% or so will be stage 2.
Because we don't come early enough, do we?
In comparison with Western data, what sort of like proportion are you looking at?
In Western data, the majority would be stage 1, stage 2. So you're looking at much higher, probably double that, stage 1.
Okay.
And so stage 3, stage 4, the advanced stages, 30% or less.
Okay. So there you go. The verdict is out there. You can benefit from it a big time if you go and get yourself screened.
The demographics are a bit different, though.
What do you mean?
Breast cancers in Malaysia affect women at a younger age compared to that in the West.
Mm. Yeah, so the typical my cousin, 36-year-old. Yeah.
Yes, right.
Unfortunately.
Do we know why?
At the moment, no. But there's very good research being done by Prof. Teo Su Huang's team.
Yes, Cancer Research Malaysia.
Right, where they're looking into this. That's why we're trying to encourage more patients or more women to take part in cancer research.
Okay. Your message on what we've talked about today, breast cancer.
There is hope, right? The whole field of oncology is in a constant flux. We're evolving. We may end up in a blind alley, a dead end. Okay, but we'll trace our way back, right? Get onto the main road and keep going. The main thing is not to lose hope. If a doctor or your oncologist offers participation into clinical trial, please do seriously consider participating. We have many patients now who fear that they'll be guinea pigs. No, you'll get the best treatment. There are a lot of the international pharmaceutical companies want to bring their trials to Malaysia. We have a very good track record in conducting these trials in universities and also government hospitals. Okay, so even government hospitals, they have clinical trials.
Okay, and so get involved is what you're saying.
Get involved, okay. Yes.
George?
Well, I'm very impressed. You know, breast cancer always get a limelight in terms of funding, research, and then also being in the forefront, really. You know, so the other thing I'm very impressed is that, you know, 82 billion cells. I think we just need to pump up a little bit more to get to 1 trillion and all put in the bags and all the cancers will be cured.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for joining us today. That was Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, and Dr. Muhammad Azrif Ahmad Anwar, consultant clinical oncologist, joining us this Friday on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.